It is Thursday morning, and the citizen lobbyist has arrived here in the studio live, and we're going to be talking a bit about two of the meetings that happened this week, and perhaps some of the other interesting things that are emerging in the world around us, reaching as far, perhaps, as Juneau, or if not that far, at least Anchorage. Welcome, citizen lobbyist.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
Pretty good. Limping along here with little technical difficulties with computers, but we'll make it happen here.
Sure. I don't doubt. Well, the good news was both meetings happened this week, the Borough Assembly and the School Board, in fast, efficient manners. They took about an hour and a half each to make some interesting decisions.
They did. Those were a record amount. In fact, I thought for a while there you can even be shorter than that, but there's always that one little conversation that seems to drag on.
Right. That is true. So I guess the question I have is, given the short nature of both meetings, what do you think was, it's kind of easier sometimes when they go on for a long time. There's so many different topics that are discussed. It's difficult. Let's go back to the Borough Assembly and start with it.
Right. Well, the Borough Assembly had a regular scheduled meeting, which means instead of meeting at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock, they actually met at 6 o'clock. They did not have a full forum. Mr. Arvin did not call in, nor was he there. Mr. Culligan was on the phone. And the manager was not there either. He was, so the managing position was by assistant manager George Hayes. That sort of always brings the reports down a little bit, I think, because those managers aren't there. City of Palmer spoke out just about events that are coming up, a couple of new businesses, ventures that are starting in Palmer. And the city of Wasilla was there, too, just to check in to let them know that they're revisiting their marijuana regulation that sort of had everybody upset about baking brownies.
Right.
Okay. And that took place last night. I haven't gotten a report yet, and I'm sure we will be getting a report, and the Frontiersman will cover it well.
I'm looking for the details. So before we launch into trying to build a discussion on too little information, we'll save that for Valley Edition and move on to the marijuana discussion tomorrow.
Right. Marijuana is taking a lot of meeting time these days.
Right.
The Assembly had four gas LIDs up, and two of them failed. Two out of four failed. This is kind of a new turn here where we're seeing normally those type of things, those limited improvement districts, kind of are a slam dunk as everybody clamors to get more gas. But with maybe the lower cost of fuel these days, different sections of the valley, it's hard to tell. But two of them out of the four of them failed. Nobody there to really talk about it. They do this through a voting mechanism, through the mail with property owners, but they didn't get the amount that they needed, so those went down. They just took a lot of different revenue sources in, some donations for the animal care. They got $270,000 for repair of culverts. This is federal money that comes in that actually does an amazing amount of repair for culverts in our borough that leads to better fisheries and better drainage and all kinds of things. Not any talk about that either. Actually, there was very little public testimony. Mr. Dean Haberman was there, as always, talking about their lack of public process and still not happy with the website. Which has taken some changes, I see, the last couple of weeks. I know, Mike, I had a little trouble finding the packet, but once it was pointed out to me, it was really easy to find, downloaded quickly. So everybody's sort of finding their way around on those things. A little bit of talk about the bonds. They're, you know, issuing some more bonds to pay for more projects that the voters have approved. And so things didn't really get too much talk until they got into a resolution regarding, actually, it was an ordinance that invoked some eminent domain out in the port region for the railroad. And that brought a few people to discuss within the body whether or not that was the appropriate thing to do and how it may or may not compromise farmland. But at the end of the day, they did pass it, another hurdle out of the way for completion of the railroad. I'm sure that will be discussed even as we go further. One more resolution that got a little bit of play, didn't get passed, got punted, came from Assemblymember Sykes, talking about perhaps the diocese should be down where the people are. What did you think of that, Mike?
Well, I thought that discussion was interesting. The end result that they didn't just cast it away, but they did offer to continue talking about it.
Yeah.
Because initially, I thought that there was going to be that's nice, but we really have other things to do, or it's too complicated, or we're just not going to go there. But at least it has some life to it. And I suppose you might say that it's a revisiting of the original design work, which posed a very significant problem. It was going to be very difficult, however they were going to do it, within the constraints of the design goal, which was to make that addition and to just tie it into the old building. And the most important part is to make it ADA compliant. They came up with a solution that arguably did lift the assembly and whoever was sitting up there to that height. And I'm not sure if this solution of moving people down on the floor will make it any better, because it's a big room, and if you're really sitting down on the floor, it's going to be something of a problem.
Well, I kind of like the idea. If anybody has not been in the assembly chambers, it's amazing how high up they sit. Everybody has probably seen the Lusac Library, where the assembly in Anchorage sits, but arguably this is even higher. There were some challenges with this addition. The addition went in, which was a former courtyard, which sat quite a bit lower. There were steps getting into the main building. And actually where the what they call the diocese, or where the assembly sits, is the old part of the building, and then the new part of the building is where the audience sits. I think what Mr. Sykes was asking for, because there's been a lot of complaints about it, is just temporarily moving the assembly down to where the people are seated, in more, so they could have more of a conversation with people that come to the borough assembly. I don't think he was asking for any huge amount of money, or it was just sort of a temporary, let's see how this works. It could be used for other meetings. The planning department meets there. It wouldn't have to be configured every time for the assembly. But, to try something new, I think, is not a bad thing. And see if that changes the idea of the discussion. It was pointed out, and it sounds like there was a fix by the end of the meeting, that the podium, so they speak, where people come up to speak to the assembly, is not handicap accessible. You just can't use it there. Sure. And that the clerk is on the search for one that will take care of that problem. But I think there was some talk about how even though the old assembly chambers were too tight, very poor facility for a borough this size, there was something about being on the same level of the people that were sitting on the assembly.
Well, I have two observations. The first one, just to finish out the layout of the place, there may be a solution that allows for not having the members who are sitting there now so high sit right on an even place, but to perhaps have and still retain ADA accessibility by having them be a foot or two above the floor. This would mean constructing a platform that was a foot or two higher, just because I'm concerned that when you're sitting in the back of that room, if everybody's on the same level, it's very difficult to see and participate. So I think personally that it would be good to have a slight rise there. Mm-hmm. And a foot or two might be possible to do and make it happen.
Well, and to try this temporarily, just to see how it works even at this level, doesn't seem to be a reach to me. I mean, they do temporary arrangements all the time. They take the show on the road. They go to Wasilla. In fact, they scheduled some meetings for the budget in the central fire hall there. It doesn't have a raised dais. It's a much even a bigger room probably than what they're sitting in now. So I think this is something that's worth trying, and I think that Mr. Sykes will probably do some recrafting of his message.
But
all of
this discussion about the layout obscures, perhaps, in my mind, a more important point, and that is a meeting of this sort, a public meeting, in my understanding, by definition, includes the public. Now, I understand that by the rules of the game, the public has some restricted points at which they can speak, but they are also part of the process. And I think that that's something that gets lost sometimes when a body, whether it's a board or an assembly, begins having a discussion up there almost to the point of having be their meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And
good point.
And I do agree with Mr. Sykes that if you are consistently involving in a way that makes it reasonable, the people who are in that audience, which means that you're speaking, and this is a particular important thing from my standpoint, so that you can be heard by the audience.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever anyone who is in the assembly or goes for the school board speaks so they cannot be heard either by other members up there or the audience, then I think that you have to call them on it.
Mm-hmm.
And say, we need to hear what you are saying. And I think that if just that one technical thing would go a long way to including people.
Right. I've made that observation myself, Mike, and that's a really good point. Part of it is for the people in the room, and it's all for the record, because oftentimes they go back to those tapes and re-listen them to straighten some hearsay out, so to speak. So
sure.
It is really, really important. And I think the clerk has done a really good job of working with this edition. It wasn't easy to get it all mic'd up the way it was. But again, I think what Assemblyman Member Sykes is asking for, to try a different seating arrangement, see how it works, have more of a conversation, might be worth a try, and I hope he gets support when he brings it back in. So we'll see. That perhaps will come back. Another thing was sort of interesting, not a lot of talk about so much, was there the mayor talking about his marijuana board, and that there are so many people that have applied to the marijuana board that he's having a hard time selecting, it seems like. But he is now talking about bringing back a resolution for alternates to the marijuana board, because there's so many people. So if 17 people isn't enough, I don't know how many they'll have for a actual, a board when it comes out. My gosh, we have 12 for a jury with a couple of alternates. So anyway, that will be very interesting. And I also should say that Assemblywoman Doty had her first piece of real legislation go through when
True.
She passed through a resolution talking about the makeup. It's sort of an advisory to the state, as these resolutions are, but talking about the makeup of the Board of Regents for the University of Alaska, this is something that's gotten a lot of play. Matsu hasn't had anybody on there, I want to say, since 1950. It's been ridiculously long that Matsu's been not representative. I think there's four on there from Fairbanks. And so this is sort of a memo to the state government saying, hey, we need to relook at how the makeup of the Board of Regents are.
Yeah, very good point.
So it was a really good point, and I was glad to see her bring that forward.
Well, how about also Mr. Sykes, I believe, who has been in the forefront requesting more budget information.
I'll let you take that, but that was really good to see.
Oh, yes. Well, my impression is that finally, and I say finally because over the years what has been clear is that as the school board does its work and the school district presents its information, it's up there, all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it, you can find it if you're a citizen or interested.
You can almost understand it.
Yeah, yep, it's there and you can see this process. The borough, in contrast, has appeared to me, maybe I've missed this, correct me, to be piecemealing it, I would almost say, not only to the public, but to the assembly.
Mm.
So that when you finally head into the final budget, it's as if the pieces of the puzzle are being put together, but they are still being created. You haven't finished the puzzle.
Right, and at least with the school district, they've adopted for the last three or four years sort of a format that they've been building on that people can understand. So they pretty much follow the same format every year, which makes it a lot easier to be on the learning curve to really understand these very complex budgets. Some arguably the school budget is even more complex than the borough budget. I think that Mr. Sykes has been really looking for ways to do that. What he's looking for now is he's wanting support to ask the manager to produce a cost of community services for us. And this is sort of identifies areas in the borough, the farmland, the commercial, the residential, and how much they produce for revenue in those areas. I think he is making a case here for, encourage these residential developments here and there, and we don't really have an overall plan of how we're developing. And all services cost, and we have spent, we've reduced property taxes some $7 million, saying that, we need those, taxpayers need those reductions, but we also have services that are expanding, not just because government is growing, but because population is growing. So to find out where those cost centers are and to see where we're really getting a return for our investment for not only where we are now, but moving forward, I think is really smart budgeting.
Well, sure.
So again, he's asking for something, not really examined by the assembly before, looking at some differences in the core and rural and maybe looking at how we develop as we go down, what rules need to be put in order so that the return is there. So I think it's he's concerned about grants that are going to be expiring. A third of the budget is made up of grants, and everybody's talking about less money from the state and perhaps the federal government. So, it's kind of a sobering look at what he said, a sobering look at what we have. So I really champion what he's doing. I think especially if it comes out in a transparent and readable way that people can understand. The mayor asked him if he wanted to make a resolution, and he hedged a little bit and said, or make a motion. And I think he's very cognizant of sort of a procedure and not trying to make motions at the end of the meeting. I expect him to bring that resolution back and be prepared to defend it. And I hope that he gets support from the community on it, because I think one more piece of information, particularly that one, will be help them when it comes to budget time decide how to.
Well, that's of course, as we've been saying, the curious thing. It is March.
Mm.
And my sense about it is right now I'm hard pressed. I've been, in part because I haven't looked at a lot, but is there a borough budget at the present time for this upcoming?
Well,
year?
They're functioning off one, and they haven't.
No, for next year.
Is there they're working on it.
Okay. And now if I turn my view over to the school district, do they have a budget?
Oh, yeah, they've got a proposed budget, and they'll be approving it at the next school meeting.
Okay, and if I remember correctly, I just want to make this real clear. Both bodies have the same deadline for having a finished budget.
Right, and you also know that there is a budget, the governor has a budget, and the legislature is working on a budget, but they don't have a finalized budget, too. This is really a food chain thing. The borough waits around to see what their best guess estimate is revenue they're going to get from the state, and the legislature is in progress right now. The school district has no idea what it's getting from the state or the borough at this point.
But the difference is the school district knows.
Makes an attempt.
Well, more than that, is saying if we were to provide X in terms of service, et cetera, then this is the budget we have, and then you can work off that.
Well, I would think that the manager, and if I remember back, the manager will roll out a proposed budget pretty soon. There is one before they sit down to budget hearings. It's a proposal. It's his budget, and he has to be ready to defend it. So, has the public seen it? No. Has there been any real work on it in assembly meetings? Uh-uh. But I have to think they're working on a budget. It's just they use a different process. So.
Right. Okay. Well, let's move from budget and perhaps move from the assembly now over to last night's meeting, which was the school board.
Right. Well, the school board did meet in its regular meeting at 6, and they had a full quorum, less the seat that they have vacant right now with some 6 candidates, I think.
Left
to interview. The school board president, Susan Palger, announced at the beginning of the meeting that they will they've received the written questionnaire back, so to speak, from these candidates. 4 have dropped out, I believe, so they're down to 6, and they expect to interview all of them in the middle of the next meeting, which is scheduled for March 18th. I did see one school board applicant in the audience. I didn't see any more.
No.
And she was taking in what was happening there, as she's been to several. That's Sabrina Combs. So we'll see, you know, how this shakes out at the next assembly meeting the school board meeting, and see who is selected. So they came off with a pretty light agenda too, Mike. We got out of there pretty early too. Dr. Parmo started out with her administrative report talking about how they have new technology at the school district, which will allow people to call in and testify on different things that are on their agenda. This is something they've been working on. They're asking callers to call in at 30 minutes before and get in queue so that they can be called back to testify, never knowing exactly when items are coming up. But they have it outlined on their website, and they're pretty proud. They're ready to take testimony from all over the borough. Also, she didn't talk about it very much, but I think it's online, the video portion now, as you can go to the school board and watch from their website, the streaming of their video. And, of course, we're streaming the audio and podcasting it for later for people to listen at the Radio Free Palmer website. So in the interest of transparency and in the interest of getting the public involved, the school district has done a good job of setting things up for that to happen.
Now, there's one other quick event that happened there, much quicker than I had expected, and that was the presentation for another charter school. And a unanimous vote, no.
Right. Yeah, they did. This was a charter school that came. I haven't heard a lot about this. Valley Comprehensive Evening High School charter application. A couple of folks came to talk about it. It was there as an action item. They described it as serving the needs of students that perhaps were working and couldn't make regular school hours, or wanted specialized training in some occupations that they didn't feel the school district was giving support on. At the end of the day, one big point came out. Susan Palger spoke up first, which is sort of out of the norm for the president, but she did, saying that she would be voting no because the school had actually missed the deadline, which is in October, to submit for the coming year for a new charter school.
So that's why I looked at that and I said, this seemed to be odd. There was really no discussion. It was a unanimous no. It almost on procedural grounds would have been rejected, and I'm not quite sure why it was even on the agenda.
Yeah, it does seem sort of, and I'm not sure where their bylaws permit that to happen, because again, this is something the state, actually, a mandate from the state, they have a timeline that they have to adhere for, and that's why the school district, you know, sets the date in October. It's not a willy-nilly, this is when we want to do it. It's just that they have to abide by the deeds.
Right. I would think that the party making the application
would have been advised of that.
Would have been advised of that,
yeah.
And wouldn't have had to stand up and describe it and then walk away. And now there's this, well, we rejected it, even though you rejected it on the basis of bad timing, if you will. I'm curious about that. That just didn't seem...
There wasn't a real good explanation for that.
Right.
You're right.
There was
so
not much
perhaps they'll give a better one next school board. They did have a little bit of update on... the superintendent was asked about the cuts to the governor's budget. He was, and the things that the legislature contemplating right now. She said that they are very aware of one thing that looks like it perhaps might happen, and that's the support from the state for school construction and the amount that the borough has been able to take great advantage of the 70-30 split that the state has done to support school construction, and that's got a lot of talk that may be going away. She let us know that, and this was on the tail end of the bond update that was given from the borough, that that in FY13 they received 57% of the money that came from the state for school construction came to the school, to our school district. That doesn't shouldn't surprise anybody. We're the only school district that is growing within the state, and so the need is clearly there. But she just wanted to highlight that and make sure that people knew that it did create jobs and some new facilities. There was a good bond update. I really like that they have someone come and give a bond update from the borough. Jeff Walden, project engineer, does a really fine job with a slide presentation, letting them know where they're on all the projects where the voters passed some almost 5 years ago. I did send an email sitting there and saying, hey, let's make sure we update the webpage too. And I was told that it will be on the district webpage today with that bond update, so everybody can see where that $214 million bond is going and where the all those different projects are. Of course, we're all very excited about the new high school being built out in Kinnick. Sounds like it's coming right along, the Joe Reddington Senior Junior High School, and it will be opening this fall, and it's looking like it's coming very close to completion. They did have a small little talk about a budget update, that they would be back next meeting with the budget on an action item. They talked about the poll that they had on their website about asking the community their input on budget, the budget survey, and that some 661 responses were given. About 363 of them were from school district employees. Of course, they are the biggest employer in the state, or in the borough, so that shouldn't surprise anybody. But they did get an adequate response from parents and some people with and without children. So it'll be they gave some of that information to the school district and or the school board, and they are pounding through that, kind of consolidating it, and hopefully that'll be on their website too. So they did talk about their concerns of people being school safety, number one, school facilities and maintenance, number two, and class size. So that was interesting. It's interesting to know. And the other big highlight came from the administration. I want to make sure that we include this, Mike, and that was in that budget that we'll see next school board. There's a 4% increase that was expected in the employee health insurance that comes from the Public Education Health Trust. And they don't ever know. They don't normally get their amount of that increase before a budget is crafted, so they just build some in. But this year they've gotten it before. I've never understood why that came in after, but this year they got that number before. There is, for I think the third year in a row, a zero increase to their health insurance for employees. Almost unheard of in the state. Right. Makes you wonder why the state doesn't join their insurance company. So that was, some $1 million is sitting in the budget that they're about to propose that they're not going to have to spend on their health insurance. So bravo there. Good news for employees that now are paying an increased amount for their employee insurance, and also to the borough as a whole, the school district as a whole, so they can use that money to put into classrooms. So that was kind of it. They talked about still needing a 3% increase from the borough to keep them whole, keep them going. They talked about some of the pre-cuts, the childhood cuts to pre-K. If this budget that's floating around at the House Finance right now, it's going to cut 5 to 6 preschools that are funded that way. So no pre-K out there. That's pretty significant.
Right.
We're hearing a lot of testimony right now at the state level on that. So by and large, those were sort of the highlights that I remember, Mike.
I think you had most of them, I remember as
well. As my computer finally fired up here. So
okay.
Next meeting will be interesting. We'll have a new school board member.
That's true. I look forward to that. Well, thank you, citizen lobbyists, for coming in today, Thursday, March 5th. And, of course, this is a morning broadcast, which will be replayed at 5 p.m. Have a good day. We'll see you next week, and we'll see you tomorrow for Valley Edition.